And welcome in to You're the Cure right here with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Check out VeritasMedical.com for archived shows and other important information to help you regain control of your health. That's VeritasMedical.com. If you have a question along the way, feel free to text that in. We can certainly do that for you this morning on the program. You can do it at 806-745-5800. That's 806-745-5800 along the way. Let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Wade. Doing good.
Hope you had a great weekend.
We did. How about you?
Oh, I did. I did. I had a great weekend, and things are going well. And I'm just going to take a stab at it here. I bet we're going to talk a little bit of COVID today. What do you think?
Yeah, we are. There's a lot to talk about.
Well, the whole third booster got presented Thursday at the White House when we thought the president would come out and talk about his failed policy of Afghanistan. No, he came out and spent a whole 30 minutes just bashing red state governors who don't want to mask up and who don't want to do forced vaccinations on its citizens. And he applauded the whole third vax deal. Oh, get your booster. We got to get a booster now. Get it, get it, get it. Yeah. And I predict that the people that get the booster, that means three shots, they're going to start hammering the people that have two shots, saying you're not doing your patriotic duty to get the third shot. Do you think, do you see that coming?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Watch.
Yeah. I mean, it's so predictable at this point. Unfortunately, this thing's turned political. If you don't have the eyes to see what's going on here, I mean, we're at a point now, I can't believe doctors are still not treating outpatient. I mean, I'm going to be stuck on that for a little bit here because we're getting slammed. I mean, probably after this show, we'll be quadruply slammed. But I talked to an ICU doctor last week, and I've talked to a number of ICU doctors, and it's the same story. And the reason I'm talking to him is because family members are calling me desperate. Hey, these doctors will not do anything outside of NIH CDC, which is basically remdesivir and Ventolate, which really doesn't work too well, which the ICU doctors are admitting to. But anyways, that's why the family calls me. They're desperate. They're getting attorneys. I've talked to more attorneys in the last 2 weeks. All revolved around why won't these how can we force these hospitals to try something outside of NIH CDC? Anyways, it's crazy. But in talking with this doctor, the common ground was she was so frustrated because she was slammed. They're full. And I think it's well established now. This is not an epidemic or pandemic of the unvaccinated. It's 50-50. After last week's show, I got even more calls and texts and emails from respiratory therapists and nurses. It's 50-50 in these hospitals. I consider it a pandemic of the untreated. Just got a text this morning, first thing, 8 a.m., from a buddy. Hey, there's an elder at my church. He's 10 days into this and going downhill, and now he's super scared he's going to die. I mean, he's at home. And I know someone locally here, because I had people call me on, he wasn't our patient, but he was in his late 40s. Otherwise, well, at least eyeballing him, these friends said, I think he's healthy. You know, he's an active guy. He's got a couple kids and a family and just, you know, seems to be a healthy youngish, 48. Mm-hmm. But he stayed at home for a week, sick. And that's what we're hearing over and over and over. Every day we're getting calls. I'm sick. I need help. Well, how long have you been sick? Oh, about a week or 10 days. I had an email from Amarillo. Went to urgent care. They told me to go home and go to the ER if I want some worse. It's the exact same story as last year. And before this little wave hit Texas a couple weeks ago, which it's probably going to last 8 to 10 weeks, historically speaking, that's what it looks like. Prior to that, I told my pracs earlier in the year, my nurse practitioners, we have 7 nurse pracs at our clinics, and they were, you know, they got a little overwhelmed last year because we take care of chronically sick patients who have failed standard of care therapy, and I'm talking chronic diseases, autoimmune, and different things. So, I mean, these practitioners are working hard, and it's pretty... I mean, it drains them. Emotionally, physically, it drains them because these are tough, tough, chronically sick patients that we're trying to really help. And we threw the COVID on top of them. Now, our members didn't really get really that sick last year. Our established patients, established membership, because they're doing the right diet and lifestyle thing. And because in general, even on standard Americans, you know, 0.01% are going to die and the rest survive. But anyways, we took on non-members last year, and it was tough because other doctors in the community were not treating these patients. And I told my practice, I don't think we'll have to do that this, you know, when this wave hits later in 2021. So this was in the spring when things were calm. I said, I don't think we'll have to. You know, my goal is to not, you know, not have to do that. You know, we'll just take care of our patients, our members. Because other doctors in the community surely by this point will be treating.
Right.
And maybe some are. I'm not going to call them all out. I don't know. I don't call around and ask. But I'm getting so many calls at my clinic from non-members, just desperate people from the public. It's crazy. This is so amenable to treatment, especially early. I mean, early on, it's a viral replication. This virus replicates for 3, 4, 5 days. Ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine do well against viral replication. And we've known this since 2005. That's the crazy part. Not only are there almost 300 studies now, let me pull this up real quick. But in 2005, Fauci himself and the NIH put out an article. You can go look it up. Chloroquine works well for SARS viruses. We should consider stockpiling it. 2005, we knew this. And we did stockpile it. Just haven't used it. You can go to C19HCQ.com, and today we are at 278 trials on hydroxychloroquine, and it's still not being used. Our answering service over the weekend took more calls from non-member COVID patients, but the second most common call for our answering service this weekend, pharmacies, wouldn't fill it without a diagnosis code. The pharmacies are even making it hard on patients.
So people are left to go to Tractor Supply and pick it up.
Yeah. So that was C19-HCQ. Go to C19 ivermectin. 63 trials on ivermectin and the benefits of ivermectin. And there is a brand new study. Just saw it today. It's set for publication September of 2021. This was a review, because recently the Nobel Prize winner, the co-Nobel laureate for ivermectin, Dr. Sadasushi Omura, and his colleagues conducted a comprehensive review of ivermectin clinical activity against COVID-19, and they concluded the preponderance of the evidence demonstrated major reductions in mortality and morbidity. That was a review from the guy who was awarded the Nobel Prize on ivermectin. Then there was a study, you can look it up on Science Direct. Let me pull it up real quick. I mean, there are just so many studies. It's like to the point of, we got to quit talking about studies. We've talked about studies enough. If you don't have the eyes to see, you're just not going to. So you can go to Science Direct. You can type in this title, ivermectin, a multifaceted drug of Nobel Prize honor distinction with indicated efficacy against a new global scourge, COVID-19. The author is Santin, S-A-N-T-I-N. And they concluded, quote, our review of the evidence updated with consideration of several new studies supports the same conclusion. What same conclusion? The conclusion that Dr. Omura, the Nobel laureate, concluded, that the preponderance of the evidence demonstrated major reductions in mortality and morbidity. So the evidence is there. It's been there. We've been talking about this for a year. Dr. McCullough's data is more on hydroxychloroquine. There's Dr. Pierre Corey and his team. It's ivermectin. And that's the thing. These ICU doctors keep telling me, we're doing NIH CDC. I said, well, is it working? No, it's not. They all, pretty much, they die. Remdesivir doesn't do anything? Well, of course not. Remdesivir is an antiviral. It stops the replication, but that replication only happens in the first 5 days. So once you're 10 days in, 2 weeks in, 3 weeks in, you're into an inflammatory and a possibly bacterial and a blood clot issue. And so Dr. Pierre Corey and Dr. Paul Merrick, FLCCC.net, these are critical care doctors. Dr. Paul Merrick is one of the most respected critical care doctors, ICU doctors in the world. He's a professor of medicine at Eastern Virginia University Medical School. He's the head of the department. He and the team of 10 different ICU doctors at FLCCC.net have published over 2,000 studies in their career. So these are no slouches. They're academics. They're in medical centers. They're smart guys. And mention these guys and their data and their website and their protocol. They have an ICU protocol. They have an outpatient protocol. They have a prophylactic protocol. They have a long-haul protocol. And these doctors aren't aware of it. They're simply not aware of it.
What about the difference between the ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine? Two questions. Would you use ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine initially at the first, both of them, or one or the other? If so, which one? And what about Regeneron? What's up with that?
Yeah, so hydroxy and ivermectin, I think they're both great. I'm honored to be on group text with doctors from around the country, and a couple of them may call in today, Dr. Brian Tyson and Dr. Stella Emanuel. And I know Dr. Tyson's numbers because he texted me. He's going to try to call in if he has time. He's slammed. 6,200 patients he's treated early. And the definition of early is within the first 7 days. He's got 3 urgent care clinics in California. 6,200 early treatment patients documented, 0 deaths. Dr. Manuel, I don't have her exact numbers. I know her telemedicine group is seeing about 1,000 a day. We had Dr. Ben Marble last week, same thing, about 1,000 a day. He's up to almost 50,000 with 4 deaths. I don't want to quote Dr. Manuel, but it's going to be somewhere similar, multiple thousands, probably over 6,000 at this point, and it's going to be probably single digits. And this is telemedicine, this, which is harder to do. You don't see the patient up close. You don't get to really examine and really, clinically decide, do I need to do a little extra? You're making a judgment over the phone. It's even more difficult. But she's going to have similar numbers. Amy Offit, Marble Falls, seeing patients in clinic and telemedicine both. She's somewhere around 1,000 patients. Just 1 or 2 deaths also. Dr. Urso down in Houston, he has the largest private practice in the world, or in America. First or second, he said, but it's right up there, basically the biggest practice in America. A private practice, not a hospital base or health system. I think he said 700 patients and 1 death, and the 1 death was a late treatment, and he was non-compliant. He didn't take his meds, super sick, obese, metabolic syndrome, diabetes, blah, 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 heart disease, I think. 1 death in a super sick guy. The evidence is there. It's been there. If you need randomized controlled trials, they're there. C19ivermectin.com, C19HCQ.com. And there's one I hadn't seen before, and I'll get your question in a second, Wade, but I want people to go here and look at this. C19, the number 19, C19 early, .com. 863 different studies on 24 different therapies, including ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, vitamin C, remdesivir, probiotics, aspirin, colchicine, vitamin D, zinc. These are individual budesonide. These are individual studies. Curcumin, iodine. The best study on here was on iodine. quercetin. Singular. 24 different outpatient therapy options. And as Dr. McCullough really stresses, this isn't about taking just one thing like ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine. It's a multi-drug approach. Like I had the guy text at 8 o'clock this morning, been sick for 10 days, no one will treat him, he's really scared, he's older, a little overweight, he just feels his shortness of breath is getting way worse 10 days in. So I can already tell you without having talked to him or seen him yet, blood clots. It's micro clots. We know the pathophysiology of this disease process. The first few days, it's going to be the viral replication. That's where hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin both work. I like them both. There's some indication maybe ivermectin wasn't working as well on Delta, so we just increased the dose and frequency. And as a group, these doctors I'm in communication with, it seems to work great when we do that. But anyways, that's early. And ivermectin does have some anti-inflammatory, and so does hydroxychloroquine, anti-inflammatory effects. So that's why it also works some late, but it works better early because it's going to block viral replication. It's a zinc ionophore. Both these allow zinc in, and zinc stops the enzyme that allows this virus to replicate. But 10 days in, you're dealing with the over-exaggerated inflammatory response, and you're dealing with microclots. So he's going to need a blood thinner. He's going to need some extensive anti-inflammatories like inhaled budesonide that Bartlett talked about, Dr. Bartlett, a couple weeks ago, and systemic corticosteroids, oral steroids. And he's going to need covered with an antibiotic, because at this point, 10 days in, he could have a secondary bacterial infection. There's so much that can be done to deal with inflammation and deal with the blood clots, even at 10 days out. If this guy doesn't get treated, probably he'll end up at 14 days or whatever going to the hospital. His oxygen saturations will be in the 70s, and he'll go to the ICU on a vent. And his chance of coming out is slim to none. I just don't understand it. It baffles me. Well, I do understand it. From a spiritual perspective, you can have an understanding. From a physical perspective only, if you're just going to look at this through the goggles of logic and science, and it's going to drive you crazy. And I've been tempted to be driven crazy. Back to your question, both, I like them both, hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. It really boils down to what can the patient get. These pharmacies are being pretty crazy. And I just got a text that Pfizer got approved, full approval, no more EUA. So that's maybe we'll talk about in the second half of the show. This, to me, it puts on full display the absolute corruption. If you haven't believed it or seen it up to this point, it's on full display now.
With that booster,
to give this gene therapy FDA full approval, nobody has addressed the adverse outcomes. That we're over 13,000 deaths now, and that's a low ball count. In Europe, there's 20,000. A CDC whistleblower 2 weeks ago said it was 45,000. That's probably way more than that by now. And then there was an analysis. I'll pull up the website so people can go look.
That's the heart issue you're talking about, the myocarditis?
We're approaching 4,000 kids with myocarditis. And kids aren't susceptible to COVID-19 at all. Zero. Zero deaths from COVID-19 if you didn't have a major underlying condition. Now we've got 4,000 kids with myocarditis, post-myocarditis potential syndromes. It's just absolutely unbelievable. I'll read through some kids that died. 13-year-old kid, 14-year-old kid, 15, 16, 17-year-old healthy kids. Zero need for them to die at all. And I don't know the total. If we're at 20 or 25 kids now that have died, and people will say, oh, it's just 25 kids. What? Tell that to their families. These are 25 healthy kids that this was an unnecessary medical therapy because they were at zero risk for dying. And that's without the hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, budesonide, and the 24 other early outpatient therapies that have evidence. C19early.com, the studies are there. You want to go nitpick all these studies? Well, this one study was small. It was only one study. It was only a few people. Fine. Nitpick them all you want. Let's go to the clinical evidence that hasn't been published, like Brian Tyson, 6,200 patients with zero deaths. And these are standard American, metabolically unfit, obese, diabetic. He's in Southern California. One of his urgent cares is is right on the border. And he told me it's a high-risk population, overweight and obese. Zero deaths. I mean, for any kid to be forced, coerced, tricked, bribed. It's just, that's the part that upsets me the most. I mean, these kids don't know any better. And parents, if they're not paying attention and they're watching the nightly news or any mainstream media, they're not going to know better. I forget what study I was going to. I'm getting too worked up here. There's so many places.
Well, I was going to ask you about, what about Regeneron? What's that about?
Yeah, it's fine. Regeneron's fine. Early on, the monoclonal antibodies, and that's another thing. Do I think it's necessary? You know, there's cheap, generic, effective things we can do super early. It's so cool. This virus is so amenable to treatment, more amenable to treatment than flu.
Well, I noticed the governor of Florida was setting up Regeneron clinics.
Yeah.
If you get sick, go to there. Take an IV.
But have people noticed the only thing being promoted are the new patentable things? Regeneron? Patentable. Remdesivir? Patentable.
Mm-hmm.
Vaccines? Patentable. The only thing you're going to get in a patentable healthcare system is patentable things. You're not going to... And notice, I may have mentioned vitamin C barely earlier, and I'm going to really mention it in the second half of the show. I'm not even talking about the quote-unquote crazy alternative stuff. Ozone, high-dose vitamin C intravenously, ultraviolet blood irradiation, peroxide, diluted peroxide intravenously and nebulized. I can't even go there. I can't even talk about that. And notice I'm not making claims on that, and I'm not advertising. If I advertise that, FTC will send me a letter. If I make a claim on it of cure or benefit, FDA will send me a letter. Because nothing can, a claim cannot be made unless the FDA says so. And you can't advertise anything. So if you think we, as a medical community, are using every weapon, Dr. Lee Villette wrote an article on AAPSonline.org this weekend, the Association for American Physicians and Surgeons, which is the only organization I know of that's speaking the truth in regards to this matter. Y'all should go to their website for sure. On the front page, you'll see early outpatient treatment guide. Print it off, take it to your doctor. Anyways, Dr. Lee Villette, she wrote an article, every weapon should be used against this. And that's what I think the general public believes. I mean, naturally we would think, oh, we're in a pandemic. Every weapon should be used. It's not the case. It's not, every weapon's not being used. C19early.com is mostly things that are, you know, conventional and accepted. We can't even go into unconventional alternative type things. It will be completely shut down.
But could you treat a patient of yours with that, that was a patient of Veritas that wanted that or requested it? Could you do it, or would, are you saying that
yes,
you wouldn't do it because of the FDA?
And we just can't make claims. We can do what's best for the patient. In that moment, we can make a clinical decision. Even ivermectin, NIH says there's not enough evidence for or against. Even though I think anybody with common sense can look at these studies and say, it looks like there's a pretty good amount of evidence for, including the Nobel Prize winner for, this doc who got the ivermectin Nobel Prize, he said major, quote, major evidence. But anyways, NIH says neither for nor against, but you keep going down on their little chart on ivermectin on NIH website, page 8, I think it was. They do say, ultimately, it's the decision of the clinician at the bedside. It's the doctor's choice. It's the physician's judgment call. And that's what so many doctors forget. Evidence-based medicine, I always quote it, there's three bullet points to that. Yes, you look at published literature. It just happens to be our published literature is pretty dang corrupted. And I'll read you an email I got from a Polish doctor whose study on masks got retracted. Remind me about that. But there, bullet point number one, published literature. Bullet point number two, clinical experience. Like Dr. Brian Tyson, 6,200 patients with zero deaths. You think he's going to stop doing that protocol just because NIH and CDC doesn't... hasn't published that protocol? Of course not. He's going to say, my clinical experience tells me this is what's best for the patient. I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then thirdly, it's patient's values. What are the patient's wishes? And that's what I talked to the ICU doctors about. Okay, CDC and NIH says use remdesivir, even though we know, and a study came out that showed people use remdesivir in the ICU setting to prolong their hospital stay. That was just published. But anyways, okay, so that's what the published authorities tell you. But what about the patient wishes? If the family's saying, please use some ivermectin and vitamin C, it'll make me, you know, I'll be able to rest easier. I'll have more peace of mind if my loved one passed, that we did all we could do. What do the hospitals do instead? They lawyer up, force these families to go to court, spend all kinds of money, time. I mean, days are wasting by. You're waiting for a week for your court date, and then you got to spend money and time and effort and energy and emotion to fight this thing and to get shot down. Anyways.
It's astonishing to me, Doctor, that these ERs, these ICUs, hasn't figured this out yet. We're well past a year into this, right?
It's more the outpatient doctors. Yeah, I mean, we could talk about so many things in the ICU setting. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to read some stuff about vitamin C, IV vitamin C. But to me, it's on the darks on the ground, outpatient family practice, primary care, urgent care, ER, not ER so much, but maybe a lot of these primary care people end up in ER as their primary care. There's so much evidence now and clinical experience. It's really overwhelming.
It's mind-boggling. It's not happening. Real quick, we'll take a little text here and then go to the break. But Dan, good morning to you. He says, CDC VAERS is showing 1,306 reports of myocarditis, pericarditis of people under 30. I know of a local person, 65-year-old, that had it. CDC would not list that in the stats. Another text here says, if these things work out or other countries... If these things work or other countries use them, why aren't we hearing about this miraculous lack of problems in other countries if that's true?
You're not going to hear about the countries where, that are using it and it's beneficial. There was one state in India. Y'all follow me on Telegram because I put, or Veritas Medical on Telegram because I put these articles up there and I'll try to find it when we're at the break. One state in India, the state governor or whatever they're called in India, and it has the city with the highest density, population density. He chose to bring in ivermectin, and immediately their cases went from the most cases per capita to the least. Went from, like, I don't know, it was like 4,000 cases a day or something crazy to 10, almost instantaneously. And the states right next to him, they continued surging because they didn't use ivermectin. Guarantee you that was not on any news. Well, you have to hunt. And I was on a Zoom call with 100 different doctors, South Africa, Brazil, various European countries. I'm on a C19 Telegram private group. It's out there. These doctors are out there. The one from Ecuador and Bolivia, I think, maybe it's Bolivia, using chlorine dioxide, published a study on it too. We can't. That will not be talked about.
But home nation states aren't doing this in any meaningful way. In other words, you're not seeing Brazil from a governmental side of things saying, our government officials, whatever their NIH is, that's our policy, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, first 3 or 4 days, go through the protocol. Or is there countries like that?
I think there are. I don't have those at the top of my head because I've just been swamped with looking at all the other stuff. But I'm quite certain there are.
That would be interesting to see.
There was one country, and I want to say it was Romania. They just completely stopped their whole vaccine program. And I don't remember if they said because the ivermectin works well. Don't quote me on that. These are all off the top of my head. But there are countries that are using it, or at least states in certain cities and areas, and mostly it's South America. But you're not going to hear about it.
No.
Guaranteed.
No, you won't hear about it. Anecdotal a little bit.
Why are we not hearing about Dr. Brian Tyson? Why are we not hearing about Stella Manuel and Ben Marble and all these guys? Why is that not on the nightly news? Why aren't we putting billboards up? Why doesn't Lubbock, whoever's in charge of the city of Lubbock billboard that we see mask and vaccine billboards, why are we not telling everybody, get to your PCP? If you're over age 50, for sure. But even if you have any medical condition or obese under age 50, get your PCP early. Call them early. There's amazing treatment that will reduce your risk of hospitalization death by 85 and 90%. Get on budesonide. Every single person in this county should know the word budesonide, hydroxychloroquine, and ivermectin. We should have this C19 and CHCQ.com. Should be plastered all over every single billboard. Why isn't the TMA, the AMA, the Lubbock County Medical Society? I don't know. But here, and then we'll go to the break. This is Dr. Wallach. Dr. Wallach did a study on the mask. This guy's in Poland. What he did was he took kids. He measured their, he put a carbon dioxide sensor at their exhale point, at their nose, without a mask, and he measured. And then he put a mask on for 9 minutes, and then he put the carbon dioxide detector inside the mask and measured again. And on average, these kids were sixfold higher than the legal cutoff that the German authorities, so maybe this guy was in Germany, but anyways, the German legal limit for CO2 inhalation by kids, they were sixfold after 9 minutes. And it was... a good study, from everything I can see, is a very good study. It was published in JAMA, Pediatrics, JAMA. And a few days later, retracted. So I emailed Professor Harold Wallach, W-A-L-A-C-H, and I asked him if I could read this publicly, and he said, of course. Because my question was, why was it retracted? Hello, Ben Edwards. This retraction was political. Our responses to the journal were never published or rebutted. The quote, additional scientific review, which the journal mentions on the retraction page, was never sent to me, although I asked for it twice. My inquiry was met with silence. I take this to mean that the review does either not exist or that it was positive. This is a doctor who published a study to support the common sense thought that if you're going to mask a kid and breathe in his own exhalation over and over and over, his CO2 level is going to rise. And the retraction, he asked for the reason as to why, and zero, crickets, nothing, silent. 100% political is his opinion. Dr. Wallach, people have to form their own opinion.
Crazy. Real quick, another text, and we'll go to the break. What does Dr. Edwards know about quercetin, lipomycel 10 times as a preventative?
Quercetin is a zinc ionophore. What that means, it opens the zinc doorway into your cell. Zinc goes in and it disrupts this polymerase enzyme that allows the virus to replicate. So anything that will allow zinc in more readily when you're sick like that, yeah, it's going to be a benefit. C19early.com has studies on quercetin, so I like it. As far as the exact formulation or brand, I don't know. But liposomal just means it absorbs. You can get it into the body, into the bloodstream, and to the cell more effectively. Liposomes are little fatty particles that, you know, so many supplement companies will package their ingredients in liposomes, kind of like the nanolipid particles that the vaccines are packaged in. I mean, same kind of concept. It allows them to be protected and get absorbed and into the system. So liposomes are good. I like them. They're fine. I don't know that particular one.
Okay. All right, we'll take the break. We'll come right back. Stick around. We've got plenty to go right here on You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, with VeritasMedical.com. Check out the website, VeritasMedical.com, for archived shows and other important information to help you regain control of your health. Check it out, VeritasMedical.com. Welcome in to You're the Cure right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD with Veritas Medical. Check out that website, veritasmedical.com. Archived programs, always put it up right there after the show. You can go there and check it out. Also, other important information to help you regain control of your health at veritasmedical.com.
All right, Wayne. I want to talk about, you know, Dr. Ben Marble last week. He's a pretty passionate guy, obviously. And I do want to say, I mean, I'm working with all these doctors. I'm on a group text with a lot of these doctors from around the country, not just Stella and Ben Marble and Brian Tyson, but many, many, many others. And I'm telling you, one of the doctors just kind of had a breakdown last week. I mean, they're overwhelmed. They're tired. They're frustrated. Imagine dealing with all these really sick patients. I know the ICUs are full and frustrated right now, too. Everyone's frustrated. But these guys, it's like there's 0.1% of the doctors in the country, it seems like. I don't know for sure what it is, but very, very few are trying to carry the whole nation as far as outpatient treatment goes. They're not being supported by the medical associations like TMA and AMA. They're not being supported by the media. They're not being supported by local media or national media, local governments that I can see at all. I know one of these doctors met with Ron DeSantis last week, and maybe there'll be more. I know they're going to push the antibodies. That's fine. I mean, push the antibody therapies. I know some are trying to meet with our governor. So just that's the backdrop. It's so frustrating to know there's a therapy that works. This multi-drug therapy works beautifully. I mean, why the guy who was in his 70s, mid-70s, well, he came on to his testimonial. He was elderly, and his oxygen saturations were in the 70s and 80s. And he was multiple days into this, and he would have been put on the vent in the ICU. And he turned it around as an outpatient because he left the hospital AMA. You know, I had a guy that was sent home on hospice, 99 years old. He survived. So, I mean, these doctors are just super frustrated. Everybody's super frustrated. So we got to understand the backdrop here. I think we can all agree. I mean, if you don't agree with what I'm about to say, I would say check yourself on your bias. Because I think it's over. The abundance of evidence is just overwhelming, I would say, at this point. So these basic background facts. Number one. COVID really just affects the elderly. Yes, if young people died, yes. I mean, I talked about the 48-year-old gentleman here locally that passed away, unfortunately. But again, it's an epidemic of the untreated. Doctors and the media and everybody are not, they're not promoting treatment. So, of course, I told this one doctor, it's like our ICUs would be filled up with kids having asthma attacks if every pediatrician in town quit using albuterol and steroid. We know what to do for asthma attacks. We know how to keep them out of the hospital and how to keep them out of the ICU, and we do it, and it works. It's that simple, and it's the exact same thing. You don't want to treat these COVID patients early, you're going to fill up your ICUs, period. Anyways, but as a whole, we've got a year and a half of data. We understand that it's 99.9% survivable, except for this. It's, you know, shun it to the elderly, if you're elderly and obese in particular. So that's fact number one. Fact number two, kids are more likely to die from flu than COVID. It just doesn't affect kids. I think it's really clear the distancing and mask and all that, lockdowns, that didn't have an impact. And early outpatient treatment works. I mean, that's the basic foundational baseline facts. So now we can talk about the vaccine. Knowing these facts, knowing we have good early outpatient therapy, and knowing that young people aren't affected by this, that's our baseline where we're starting at. Now we have to get into safety and efficacy. Because we know we have stuff that works already. It's super safe. Ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, budesonide, the 24 other therapies on C19early.com. So something's got to be really be effective and safe to go speedily through an FDA approval process. And I think at best, and this is at best, if you're a total pro-vaccine, you know, your goggles are blurred by giving Pfizer and FDA the benefit of the doubt on things. At best, I would say, and I think they would even say, the most this vaccine would do is decrease the risk of more severe disease. How much does that risk decrease? We don't fully know because it's dropping week by week by week. Every time a new study comes out, it's less effective, less effective, less effective. But at most, that's what we're going to be able to say. It doesn't. We know it doesn't prevent you from getting COVID or spreading COVID, which most people, I think, that got the shot thought that's what they're getting it for. There was not true informed consent based off the people that I've talked to. The evidence is very strong that the mass vaccination program created the Delta variant. It pressured the virus to mutate to this. The Delta is not covered by the vaccine. When coupled with a prior infection, if you've had COVID before and then you get vaccinated, where there's three different studies that say there's increased risk of adverse outcomes, we have no idea what a booster is going to do. So at best, it's super murky. The data is emerging every day. How much does it really decrease the risk of more severe disease? And at what cost? How many kids died? How many kids got myocarditis? How many young people that otherwise would have breezed right through COVID have been injured and damaged? That's the risk assessment that needs to be done, and the FDA and CDC have yet to address that. There's no weekly safety meetings like there should have been. No one can answer this question. Why does VAERS, the European VAERS, have 21,766 deaths reported and 2,074,000 injuries? And if you go on some of these Facebook pages and websites for these vaccines injured, it's awful. The neurological devastation, the paralysis, 2 million injuries. This is European VAERS. Here's gov.uk, the UK VAERS basically. 1,559 dead, 1,135,000 injured. Here's publichealthscotland.scot, S-C-O-T, 5,522 dead within 28 days following COVID-19 vaccine. Brazil, this is 32 8,000 dead following the COVID-19 vaccine within 30 days. This is Dr. Peter Schirmacher, chief pathologist, University of Heidelberg, pro-vaccine. He randomly chose 40 people to do autopsies on that happened to die within 2 weeks of being vaccinated. Per Dr. Schirmacher's clinical judgment during the autopsy, 40% of these deaths were due to the vaccine. And quote, the frequency of fatal consequences of vaccine are underestimated. These need to be addressed. Dr. Schirmacher calls for lots of money being put to do more autopsies. He just did 40. We need to do 140. We need to do 1,000. We need to do 2,000. And if his data holds true, 40%, at the very minimum, people need to be made aware of this. At the minimum. Whistleblower. I mentioned already 45,000 deaths. That whistleblower's risking her job. The lawyer who brought the lawsuits risking his law license. That needs to be addressed. So, safety is in... There's a very big question on safety. Efficacy, at the very most, it may reduce severe disease some, but at what cost? And that's without using the early outpatient therapies at work. So it's very, very difficult for me to give a evidence-based, logical, rational, reasonable answer to someone who's going to ask me today in my clinic, why did FDA just approve Pfizer?
Okay, quick text. Is the X-Clear product spry with xylitol good for curbing COVID?
I have not seen any studies on xylitol. It's in spray. Xylitol is a sugar alcohol, and it does grab some bacterial species in the mouth and in the nose. So I've seen studies on it for gingivitis and stuff like that, oral, dental issues.
Another quick text. Are you concerned about the vaccines that are morphing could cause a higher mortality rate with COVID? In other words, get something out that, like, is really, really bad, like, down the road. Like, we vaxxed ourselves into a corner where now we've got one floating around, some variant strain that's got a 5 or 10% mortality rate or something.
Right. It's hard to answer that. We don't know. And that's the biggest take-home message. We don't know much because all this is brand new and early, and we're dealing with what appears to be. I think the evidence supports that this is a man-manipulated virus. So it's hard to give hard evidence. This is opinion. But I will say there's plenty of evidence on antibody-dependent enhancement that Dr. Ben Marble was talking about. And he formed that opinion based off virologists like Luc Montagnier, who won the Nobel Prize. He's concerned about this antibody enhancement. Dr. Cahill out of Ireland, I believe. But here's a study. Antibody-dependent enhancement SARS-CoV-2 vaccine and therapies. This is September 9th, 2020. It's out of Nature Microbiology, and it talks about the mechanisms. So, and we know animal studies 20 years ago after SARS-CoV-1, and they tried to do these coronavirus vaccines, that antibody-dependent enhancement killed the animals when they were re-exposed. So the animal got vaccinated, they developed an antibody to SARS, but then when they were re-exposed to coronaviruses, their immune system responded in an exaggerated manner that killed the animals. So looking at the historical data, that's a concern. Then you hear these virologists who are saying, hey, this is probably and could happen. It's their opinion. Judy Mikovits, Cahill, Montagnier, could they be biased or have some axe to grind against Fauci or whatever? I don't know that, but we have to use our discernment. And now, Dr. Robert Malone, who's the inventor of the mRNA or contributed to the technology for the mRNA, he's concerned about the same thing. And he's some of what he's seen with these exaggerated immune responses. And Dr. Brian Tyson at the Urgent Care out in California said he's seen it. He's seen some chest x-rays that show they're awful. There's this exaggerated inflammatory response in these patients that are super sick and they're vaccinated. So could it happen? Yeah, it could. Is it happening? It's probably early to say, maybe. in the future, is it going to happen worse, like Ben Marvel said last week? Who knows? He thinks so, based off these virologists who think so. Could it force an even more deadly variant? Who knows? Probably not, because viruses over time tend to emerge are more transmissible but less deadly. And that's what we're seeing with Delta. You know, will it be pressured to emerge differently and more deadly? Who knows? I mean, will it be the virus itself that's more deadly, or is it the antibody-dependent enhancement that's causing the more deadly feature? There's so much unknown, and that's what happens when you start tinkering with God's original design. You cannot improve on God, period. There's no way we're going to get a better immune response than the natural immune response that your God-given immune system gives you. It's a multifaceted immune response, multiple different T cells, multiple different antibodies, not just one or two antibodies, antibodies to the entire, all the different pieces of the virus, not just the spike protein. The natural immunity is always better. That's why if you get measles when you're a kid, you're going to be immune for the rest of your life. And vaccine-induced quote-unquote immunity, there are people that won't carry that immunity for life. This is well-known. It's always been well-known. It's just we've forgotten it or not talked about it. I don't really have time to get to the vitamin C, but I want to encourage people to read Primal Panacea, Tom Levy, L-E-V-Y. He's a doctor and a lawyer. It's an amazing book. I love history. And you go back into medical history and you see what these guys are doing in the 1920s, 1930s, 1940s. It's incredible. And Dr. Frederick Klenner, K-L-E-N-N-E-R, he was a doctor out in North Carolina. Amazing guy, worked in the ER. And he published probably hundreds of studies. He was in Reidsville, North Carolina in the 1950s to the 1970s. One study, 60 out of 60 cases of polio resolved symptom-free in 72 hours. 327 out of 327 cases of shingles resolved and symptom-free in 3 days. 7 out of 7 cases of rheumatic fever resolved in 3 days. These are just three studies out of hundreds. And half the book is just studies on everything from venom, you know, snake bites, to tuberculosis, to typhoid fever, to heavy metal poisoning, and trichinosis, and strychnine poisoning, and tetanus, and, you know, different overdoses, benzodiazepine, a drug overdose, selenium poisoning, strep infection, pseudomonas, PCB toxicity, radiation toxicity, rabies. I mean, I'm just going through the index here. Multiple whooping cough, just nickel poisoning, nitrate toxicity, malaria, leprosy, measles, mono, mumps, mushroom poisoning, herpes, hepatitis, fluoride poisoning, lead poisoning, diphtheria, common cold. And there are anywhere between, it looks like, 4 to 12 studies under each one of these that I'm talking about here. That was back in the 50s. High-dose intravenous vitamin C is well-published. It's just not talked about. If you do a PubMed search, there's over 50,000 articles on vitamin C. Humans don't make vitamin C. Goats make vitamin C. Pretty much all the other mammals make vitamin C. And when they're sick, their vitamin C production ramps up 10 to 100 fold. Why aren't we studying it? It has been studied, actually. Why isn't it talked about on the news? I don't know. I do know. If people can't see that the root of all evil, the love of money, is at play here, then you just can't see it. How much time do we have, Wade?
We got about 5 minutes. Got a quick text, too. Best option for a Veritas medical patient to get an IVM script for a spouse and or family, other doctor office not returning phone calls, even though IVM protocol was inpatient room.
They can contact the clinic. I just hired another nurse prac. We are going to see non-member COVID, but since I'm announcing this on the radio, we may get overwhelmed, so be patient. But hopefully we can get them in today or tomorrow. If we get overwhelmed, we're going to triage and do sequence first. And, the older you are, the more diseased you are as far as chronic disease. And the number of days you've been sick, those will get priority. Prophylaxis will get less priority. And honestly, guys, if you're less than 50 and healthy, you don't need prophylaxis. if you catch COVID, you catch it, you treat it early. No problem. Done. Bam. Knocked it out. And then you have immunity probably for life. You definitely have stronger immunity than any vaccine-induced immunity. I got to read a quick story. I think I can do it in 5 minutes. And the point of this is to prove that maybe the FDA is not always 100% ruling righteously only for your benefit. So pre-1992, the FDA was funded by you, the taxpayer, only. And after 1992, there was an act called the Prescription Drug User Act, and it brought about this Prescription Drug User Act fee, where the FDA can charge a fee to drug companies to try to fast-track, and the fee is 1.4, well, back in 2010, the average application fee was $1.4 million, and in 2010, they brought in $569 million from drug companies, the FDA did. This is not related to COVID, but it'll give you a good idea what we're up against. Stan Brzezinski, medical doctor, PhD, MD. He's a doctor and biochemist who was able to do what over $5 billion per year in taxes has not been able to do through the National Cancer Institute. So Dr. Brzezinski was earning his doctorate in biochemistry. He discovered through observation that there were some proteins and amino acids absent in the urine and blood of people with cancer that were present in healthy people. So he theorized, he made a clinical judgment calling a theory like scientists are supposed to do. They make an observation, then they make a hypothesis. He theorized that cancer patients might be helped through the administration of these proteins that were missing in the cancer patient's urine, but they were present in the healthy patients. He thought, what if I isolate these proteins, give them to cancer patients, maybe it'll help them. He called them anti-neoplastins. Over time, he was able to test his theory. Truly miraculous results followed. So miraculous, in fact, that in 1977, he retained a legal counsel in his home state of Texas to determine if he could establish his own cancer research institute outside of the NIH. The lawyers determined, and the state courts confirmed, that as long as he performed his research within Texas state guidelines of then the federal government, including the FDA, had no jurisdiction. It is more than revealing in itself that Dr. Brzezinski sought to avoid future legal intrusions into his clinic before they even occurred. So, he discovered that this protein was beneficial in some cancer patients. He decided to study it more and to treat patients this way, and he sought out a lawyer's advice on how to do it legally. That's very telling in and of itself, so I'll go on with the story. With that assurance and understanding, Brzezinski set up a clinic and began to treat patients with his anti-neoplastins. People with incurable cancers were going into remission quickly, thoroughly, and without side effects. As his fame grew, people started coming from all over the globe to receive treatment. Many cancer patients who were deemed terminal and incurable were often cured. Then the most incredible nightmare for Brzezinski began. In 1983, the FDA filed a civil action against Dr. Brzezinski, demanding that his activities be curtailed. Prior to the end of the trial, the FDA sent a threatening letter to the judge, stating the FDA would be forced to use, quote, a more severe and less efficient remedies, end quote, to stop Brzezinski if the court failed to do so. Even though the court ruled in Brzezinski's favor, FDA attorneys boasted, quote, we have other ways to get him, quote, end quote. With obvious pressure from the FDA, the Texas State Board of Medical Examiners began to send investigators to the homes of Brzezinski's former patients, even as far away as California, in an attempt to get them to file complaints against him. In spite of the huge number of patients visited, their efforts failed. In 1985, any inquirers asking the FDA about Dr. Brzezinski were told that he was under criminal investigation. Eventually, a judge issued a cease and desist order against the FDA, along with a firm reprimand for this obvious attempt to destroy Brzezinski's reputation. Later that year, the FDA raided Brzezinski's clinic and seized over 200,000 pages of research documents, along with all his patient records. A few months later, the FDA convened a grand jury in an attempt to bring an indictment against Brzezinski. The grand jury found no wrongdoing and refused to permit the filing of any federal charges against him. A year later, the FDA conducted another raid on the clinic and seized another 100,000 pages of research documents and patient records. Soon after, the FDA convened another grand jury. The jury again found no wrongdoing and refused to indict Brzezinski. In May of 1986, due to outside pressure, most belief from the FDA. The Texas State Medical Board of Examiners informed Dr. Brzezinski that although there had been no complaints, they were starting an investigation and he might want to retain legal counsel. Subsequently, the board called him in and tried to persuade him to cease his activities. In November, the board requested patient records to show efficacy of his treatment. They promised to leave him alone if a board of oncologists found that his therapies were helping people. In good faith, Dr. Brzezinski agreed and submitted more than double the documentation requested. Nearly 2 years later, in 1988, the Texas State Board of Medical Examiners disallowed all of Dr. Brzezinski's documentation and filed a charge that he was in violation of Section 3.08, paragraph 4A of the law, stating that it was, quote, grounds to cancel, revoke, or suspend his medical license. 2 years later, in 1990, the board filed an amended complaint with virtually identical charges. Again, the court found no wrongdoing and no action against his medical license was taken. In the same year, the FDA convened a third grand jury. At the same time, the FDA began to contact suppliers and others associated with the clinic, stating that Brzezinski was under grand jury investigation. No wrongdoing was found, and still no formal charges were filed. Nevertheless, the FDA continued to investigate and harass Brzezinski for the next 2 years. The Texas State Board of Medical Examiners filed a second amended complaint against Brzezinski on August 14, 1992. Again, the court found him not guilty. In January of the following year, 60 of Brzezinski's patients petitioned the Texas State Board of Medical Examiners to stop harassing him. Almost immediately, the board requested the patients' petitions be stricken from the record. A few months later, the case went to trial. During this trial, Nicholas Petronis, MD, a board-certified radiologist, professor of radiology at Georgetown University, and both founder and chief neuroradiologist at the National Cancer Institute, voluntarily flew to Texas to testify on the doctor's behalf. Under oath, he stated that Dr. Brzezinski's anti-neoplastic therapy was safe and effective against brain cancer. At the conclusion of the trial, the judge ruled in Brzezinski's favor, finding that the board did not introduce any competent and substantial evidence that his therapy was not safe or effective. The FDA convened a fourth grand jury in 1994. Once again, no credible basis for formal charges could be found. I think we gotta go. Get the book, read the rest of the story. I don't have time, I'm sorry. Tried to squeeze that in. Primal Panacea, Tom Levy. Go read the dozens and hundreds of studies by Klenner on vitamin C. Read the story about Brzezinski, or get the Brzezinski movie. It's out there. Just Google that. You can find it. See the whole documentary.
Okay, one final text before we go. This was, is there anything you can do to cleanse your body of the vaccine once you've taken it?
Not that I'm aware of. I would say steward your health, and this is the same answer I always give, so you're going to think it's a record, just a recording, but it's it. I mean, you've got to steward your own immune system, nutrition, hydration, movement, and peace. The number one thing I've told patients, especially after last week when Dr. Marble brought some fear, I come against that, that fear shouldn't drive anything. If fear drove you to get the shot, repent for that. The spirit of fear should have no influence. If you're a believer, should have no input in your decision making. Now, if you're fearful that you may, suffer from adverse effects long term, because we can't say there's no long term studies. The animal models from the previous SARS-CoV, like we talked about, there's antibody dependent enhancement. Is everybody going to die from that? Like Marble said, and some other doctors said, I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know. But if that brought fear, same thing. Fear is from the kingdom of darkness. So the biggest thing to cleanse yourself, I would say, is cleanse your heart. If your heart and your mind was influenced by, again, I'm talking to believers here, it's clear. Scripture says God doesn't give us a spirit of fear. So if a spirit of fear came in, repent from that. If you cleanse your heart and get right with God and understand He's sovereign and no vaccine or doctor or COVID or anything has power and authority over you as far as taking your life, God determines the day you were put into your mama's womb. God determines the day you go home. I believe those days are set. It's all about quality of life and stewardship of our earthly vessel while we're here. And spirit of fear gets us to misstewart ourselves. And if that happened, then repent and go the other way and don't ever walk in fear again. Jesus overcame all that on the cross. Don't reject Jesus by submitting to the spirit of fear of death, fear of dying, fear of sickness and disease and, fear of anything. I mean, you're submitting to the enemy. The enemy was defeated. All those demonic influences were defeated by Jesus on the cross. So if what Dr. Marvel said brought fear, that was surely not my intent to ever bring fear. We bring, my people die from lack of knowledge. So we try to bring information, knowledge, especially when there's such corruption in our knowledge center or media where people get most of their knowledge from. These are corrupted institutions. Obviously, the FDA is, there's no way they can't be biased when they're getting millions and millions and millions of dollars from the companies that they're approving. So use your discernment. This is a spiritual, more than physical battle that we're in. So put your spiritual goggles on and let the Holy Spirit guide you and steward your health. Your body will detoxify itself if you just steward it. I would say the last thing, fast. From a spiritual cleansing standpoint, we fast because we're more able or more clearly to hear the Holy Spirit. But from a physical perspective, when you fast, you get your cells go through apoptosis, programmed cell death, autophagy, that's house cleaning. These cells clean themselves out, the weak ones, the damaged ones, the inflamed ones, they die and your body will sweep the house clean. So autophagy happens when you fast. Do some fasting, that'll physically clean you, do the four pillars, mostly be at peace, do some spiritual cleansing and repentance, get the mind and heart right. So fast would be the number one thing.
And you've been listening to Dr. Brent Edwards, M.D. You're the Cure right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM. Check out VeritasMedical.com for archived programs and other important information to help you regain control of your health. That's VeritasMedical.com.